Bulimia sucks, but you don't, and here's why. The Bulimia Sucks podcast with Kate Hudson Hall will teach you how to begin breaking through the multitude of thoughts, feelings, triggers, and urges to empower yourself to change your painful behaviors completely. You will hear proven strategies and solutions to help you in your recovery, including real interviews with real people. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon. And now, another episode of Bulimia Sucks, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Bulimia Sucks. My name is Kate Hudson Hall, and these are real stories from people who are suffering or have suffered an eating disorder. It's a platform for people to share relatable, uplifting and inspiring conversations based on bulimia and anorexia and other eating disorders, their victories and challenges. And episodes will include their personal stories of where they are now and their difficult journeys and their steps taken into recovering from their eating disorder. And we'll be talking to a wide variety of people who are going through or recovering or recovered from their eating disorder, but also to professionals who work with people with eating disorders. Now, our guest today is Sherry Williams. And Sherry is the heir of the Maybelline legacy and is Tom Lyle Williams' great niece, award-winning speaker, celebrity columnist, and the author of her first book called The Maybelline Story. But she's also going to tell us about her second book, which will be coming out soon. And in her book, she guides her readers through the birth of the Maybelline empire, revealing intimate and never before told details about the fascinating family dynasty. And Sherry, like I said, has her second book coming out in 2022, and it's called Maybelline, Out of the Ashes. So I feel incredibly honored today as she's here to share her journey through her incredible and inspiring life and in going to tell us about her difficulties that she had with her eating disorder. So welcome, Sherry. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for the beautiful introduction.
Oh, that's wonderful to have you here. So now where to begin? Yes. So tell us about, let's begin when you became aware of your issues with your eating disorder.
Okay, when I became aware, I think I knew that love was conditional based on how I looked. As a child, I know that I started gaining weight when I was maybe 10 years old. And by the time, like 2 or 3 years later, my grandmother, Miss Maybelline, said, we've got to do something. You know, we're going to be ruined if she keeps getting any fatter. Okay, so I got to the large number of 120 pounds when I was 12 years old. And I asked my mother to please give me some diet pills. And she didn't even try to address the fact maybe I needed more understanding, attention, love. She had just had her fourth child and she had taken dexedrine diet pills from her doctor.
Yeah.
And the doctor gave me the prescription, a 12-year-old girl who was still growing and developing, you know, all of the insides not quite put together. And I started taking those. And yes, I did lose the weight because you take dexedrine, you don't eat, and you are hyper energy, you know, yeah. Can't sit still. So I became really an asset at that point because not only am I losing weight, but I'm making all the beds and I'm fluffing up the sofa, and when they had parties, I would come in the morning before they woke up and I'd clean it all up. So in other words, my eating disorder and my now going into addiction, basically taking diet pills, was yeah. benef- benefiting my parents. You know what I mean? I wasn't getting what I really needed in parenting. Emotionally, I obviously was lonely inside.
Yeah.
I obviously was trying to fill a void from eating. I obviously was not getting proper nutrition, being able to eat whatever you want. My mother would have so much beautiful Easter candy. I mean, really good candy. It's called like See's candy here. Chocolate, wonderful eggs and everything. And she wouldn't care if I would just sit there and eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know what I mean? There was no concept in those days of nutrition or food or what it did to your body or if it made your face break out. So I was felt like that I kind of grew up in shark-filled waters trying to figure it out myself, either using food and now not using food, developed a personality that was starving, and then to fill the need, stuffing. And then reading, like I said, in Cosmopolitan magazine back then, how to lose 5 pounds in 24 hours, you know, getting on the diet thing. And then I started getting sick and throwing up. And that, I don't even know how I graduated from high school. Every 2 months, I was sick throwing up for 2 weeks. So now add that to it. It's like I was being developed into an addict with no awareness, no support. And coming from a family that is all about outer beauty, it was very difficult because perfectionism was, you know, probably stronger in my family than in most families.
Yeah.
I looked at movie magazines. I looked at models. I compared myself with them. I had to keep myself at that level. And that, my grandmother would say, no one's going to marry you unless, you know, whatever the deal was that she wanted to manipulate me about. If you keep doing that, no one's going to marry you. So now I have this feeling that I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not, you know, whatever it is, I'm not enough. So food is my best friend. And then food is also my enemy. And so there's a love hate with my parents, a love hate eventually even in any relationship I had, because the basis of my relationship was with food. So I think that's how it kind of got started.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Can you relate?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Can we just pause there? I forgot to ask you, Sherry, about a funny story.
Oh, yes. We forgot the funny story. Oh, sure.
Have you got a funny story to share with us?
All right. I'm going to give you a funny story. I think it's funny. Okay. After the Maybelline company sold, all of the family came into millions, you know, because my great uncle only had family get Maybelline stock. So when the company sold all the stock from all the cousins and everybody, so it began the flurry of who would have the biggest house, who would have the biggest boat, who would have the most cars. This wasn't me. This is my parents' generation, my father. Because he was the heir. And with that became showing off, you know, and they were only in their early 40s, my parents. And so we moved down to Newport Beach, which is a very exclusive place, Lido Isle in California, Southern California. And so my dad got the big yacht, okay? And it was the boat parade. So we have arrived. We are going to be out on this boat, this big yacht that's going to be covered with lights and, you know, Christmas music playing and all the family dressed up with fur. You could wear fur coats back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of my parents' oldest friends, in fact, it was my grandmother, Miss Maybelline's boyfriend back in the 30s, was going to dress up as Santa Claus and with a beard and everything. And he was going to be at the front of the boat, and he was with a microphone going, ho, 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 Merry Christmas. Probably said from the Maybelline family. I don't know, but anyway, all of this here we were, spectacles, and everyone's drinking, okay? Everyone's drinking. Probably my dad was driving the boat drinking, because you could do anything you want back then in the 70s. And Santa Claus was getting so drunk that he tripped and fell into the bay. And we're going, oh my gosh, is he going to come up? So all of a sudden, boing, he comes out of the water, still holding his drink, going, and Merry Christmas to all. And it was the whole boat, all the boats around us, everything. That's how we made our big splash into Newport Beach. And I never forgot that story, because you would have to have been there to the trauma of seeing him go over, and how hysterical it was, because he was totally like Dean Martin. You know what I mean? Nothing was going to stop. The show must go on. So I'm in the water. Merry Christmas to all. So I think that is really a cute, funny story.
That's a great story. And him coming up with his drink.
Yes, Merry making Christmas. Our debut on Toledo Isle. Yes, our Santa Claus, so drunk, he falls into the bay. It's probably never happened. Okay, so that makes you laugh. That makes me.
So that's a great story.
So fun.
So going back to when you were growing up, do you think anybody in your family recognized the behaviors, your behaviors with regards to food?
Yeah, they thought I was eating too much, but they didn't care what I ate. They didn't care if I had a donut for breakfast or a hamburger and a malt for lunch and Mexican food for dinner. There was no real nutrition.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I learned finally about the importance of what you put in your body.
Yeah.
But, I think that they just were worried that I was going to be fat. They were very concerned that that would be worse than Charlie falling off on the boat and embarrassing us at the, you know, I would be an embarrassment. You couldn't love me. I wouldn't be lovable.
Yeah.
So.
And unconsciously for you, teaching you all of these negative.
Sad.
So for you, if you put weight on as you went throughout your life, put weight on, you were kind of taught that you'd be unlovable.
No one would marry me. So, and that was very important, by the way, to make a good marriage. So there was two sides of the sword. You've got to do this. You've got to be able to be a lovely hostess, and you have to be able to, you know, read a Time magazine and everything so that you are a lovely conversationalist and a gourmet cook, and you have to marry an executive so you would be like the perfect executive wife, sort of like, just really phony. And if you don't do those things, plus you have to wear really beautiful clothes and be thin and make represent the family. And if you don't do those things, then you're not going to be loved. You're not going to get, no one's going to marry you, and you'll have failed.
Yeah.
You'll be a failure.
Yeah. So not only did you have to strive to be perfect, there was also that fear of failure as well.
Really scary. Yes.
And then, you know, if you didn't perform, then, you know, then you would be not only not be loved, but you would be disowned, I suppose, would be, you know, a sort of a feeling, would it?
You know, just as you're talking, it's bringing up all these like sad feelings. And I just was in performance mode pretty much all the time. Performance.
Yeah.
Always doing what would make me lovable, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that's how I got my husband too. Because I was so giving and generous and perfect. I was perfect. I was a Stepford wife. You know what a Stepford wife is,
right? Yeah. But the thing is, though, that you put on this performance, but you're not being honest with yourself.
That took a lot of recovery to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Down deep enough to find the child I had abandoned, because it was not good enough. I had to create this robot child and abandon the true child, because that was embarrassment. You're an embarrassment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, right. And then I didn't know that I was in this cycle, right? How would I? You just don't know.
No.
First of all, there was a lot of parties going on. It wasn't like we were a quiet family that was parties. My parents had parties, I'm going to say, five times a week. My sister and I grew up sitting on the piano bench, falling asleep you know, watching them, it was not a child-centered home.
Yeah.
It was a very adult-centered home. So you had to become an adult. You had to be able to relate to the adults. They did not seem to relate to children's needs, particularly my grandmother, Miss Maybelline. She would say, children are to be seen and not heard. Go outside, your father and I are talking.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Rejection. Okay, so let's add rejection here to the cake. Yeah. And yet, that's what I learned was love. And then the other thing that I learned was love was getting money.
Oh,
if
yeah.
You're good, you get money. And then you can go shopping. You could go on a trip. You could get a car for your birthday. You know what I mean? You could have a huge wedding. You could do all these things if you sign a contract to be what we need you to be to represent us. Oh, and you can't do anything that would ever embarrass the Maybelline company. You have to always be lovely and a hostess. Oh, I was so good at that. And actually, I got to the point where I really liked it. It was pretty fun dressing up, and, you know, when I was older, and always having beautiful clothes and going out to dinner and people coming over. No, I didn't know I was in the bear trap. You know what I mean? I didn't know that there was a problem.
Yeah.
All I know is I married an alcoholic drug addict, but that was fine because I didn't know anybody that wasn't in the 70s.
Yeah.
And of course, before you know it, now I'm doing cocaine because he's doing cocaine. All of his friends are doing cocaine at all the parties. Now, my parents aren't having the parties. Now I'm having the parties. And we would have the china and the crystal and the, you know, candelabras and everything beautiful and this beautiful dinner. And then no one would eat the dinner because we were too high on coke.
Yeah.
You know, that all seemed fine to me. I thought we were super cool. We were like rock stars. You know, my husband was an attorney, but he was also in a band, a rock and roll band. So I got to dress up like, you know, a rock star and go to concerts all the time and snort coke and smoke pot. And then I started snorting coke for breakfast with coffee. So I didn't eat all day. Huh? Get down to 100 pounds. No, really, I got so thin, wear size zero jeans. You know, the whole thing. Going to a Mick Jagger concert and being in the front row and taking off my top and having a crocheted bathing suit, sparkly top. You know, I was like out there.
Yeah.
It's because I had not developed who I really was. I was a creation of what my grandmother had turned me into. That's what it is. But I was fabulous.
It was fun at the time.
I was fabulous, but I was very lonely inside, knowing that, I don't even know if my husband, I don't think my husband really wanted me to be who I really was. Yeah. That's not who he married. That became an issue, and eventually he divorced me and married a girl 15 years younger. So, yes, it was not easy living up to the standards of what was expected of me from the family.
Sherry, with regards to your eating, as you were a teenager, so you were on these diet tablets, so therefore you weren't really eating, and then you lost the weight, didn't you? So when you were 12?
Yep, got skinny.
And then you got all so much praise for that.
Yes.
It's that whole negative pattern of becoming slimmer and getting praise for it. And then, so then you stayed on the diet tablets for years, didn't you?
Yes. And then that sickness, I got sick from living like that. And it created a terrible inflammation in my colon, it's called the ileum. The ileum is the part of the stomach where the food goes from the stomach into the small intestines. And mine was like really ruined. It was pretty much like Crohn's disease, very sick. And then I would not starve. I couldn't eat. When you have like Crohn's, I mean, it hurts, it burns, it's you throw up, it's horrible. So it took about 2 weeks for the inflammation to go down. And then I was back running And that went on for 20 years.
God.
20 years I lived with up and down, up and down. And of course that affects your personality too. You know, you're sick half the time, you're on half the time. And oh my God, just talking about this, I don't even know how I survived. But yeah, that was terrible, being so sick for so many years. Till after my baby was born. She was a year and a half when I finally got well on every level. I found the light.
Did they operate on your intestines on that part?
I had two. I had one when I was, I think I was in that ninth grade, and they went in there and I was 19, I think. Anyway, they went in there and they did an exploratory to find out what is going on. And then they said that my intestines looked like raw meat. That's pretty terrible. That's pretty bad inflammation.
Yeah.
And that I'd also messed up my liver from so many years of doing over-the-counter drugs. This wasn't even getting into the illegal drugs. This was just doing Excedrin and anything that I could do for pain. And my grandmother was also giving me Valium and sleeping pills when I stayed at her house, and not uppers, but mood elevators. And it seems like they were absolutely creating a little drug addict, weren't they? But I certainly was a rock star if I showed you pictures. And just by me being an ordinary person and telling you this, imagine what it is like for celebrities and rock stars.
Yeah.
That kind of pressure to be absolutely camera ready every minute. Yeah. And having so many expectations. And if you begin to age in any way, they go, oh my God, did you see? Her stomach looks like it's starting to get a little fat. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So I didn't have anything that bad, but in my ordinary life, I might have created it myself. I liked being beautiful and perfect. You know what I mean? I can't blame it. Once I learned how to do the whole thing, then it was like, always going to be thin. I'm always going to have beautiful clothes. And then life started, it's like life has a way of being your teacher. And my first traumatic thing that happened was I lost a baby.
Right.
Because of my eating disorder. I was 4 months pregnant, but I would not take, I was 4 months pregnant and I would not take the prenatal vitamins because they would make me fat. Oh. And I would not eat hardly anything.
Oh.
And I would not have the test to find out. I think they would go in there and they put a needle in there and find out if everything's okay. I would not have that. I was completely, eating disorders make you very controlling.
Yeah.
Because you control your food, which is your primary thing. First thing you have when you're born is you suck, it's your primary. And so with my first child, Georgia, she was, I didn't even really get fat. I only weighed 115 when I got pregnant. I weighed 139 when I think I gained 23 pounds or something.
Wow.
The moment I got pregnant with Georgia, I joined Weight Watchers.
You joined Weight Watchers.
Any weight. But with the second baby, not Weight Watchers. Yeah, Weight Watchers. I joined Weight Watchers and I went to the meetings and everything and was weighed in every week. And, only gained 23 because I was pregnant and the perfect weight for my size and everything was 23 pounds. That's how much you would gain. That's not really that much. So when I had the baby 5 weeks early, premature, probably because of my eating disorder, I was back into my jeans immediately. You know what I mean? I could wear a bathing suit immediately. I really didn't gain that much weight. So the second time I got pregnant, I was older. I was 38, I think. I was with Georgia. Okay, with Georgia, I was 30, got pregnant when I was 29. Now I really didn't want to gain any weight. So It was so terrible when I went in to hear the heartbeat and they said there was no heartbeat.
Oh, God.
The baby had died inside of me. And that I would have to carry it for until it aborted itself because it had already created, fluid, amniotic fluid. So they can't really, at that time anyway, they didn't go in and give me a DNC. And then the doctor said things like, well, be prepared because body parts could come out. What?
What?
So,
oh my
anyway,
gosh.
My husband left me. And that was when I began to go, something isn't right here in paradise. It was a baby. It was a boy. I did deliver it. It was a little, they brought it in. And it was a little boy. And it was, I knew I'd never have another child. So I never got over losing the baby boy.
No.
And that was the beginning of me really having a spiritual awakening. I fell to my knees in my granny gown. My husband was gone. Baby had died inside of me. I just and looked in a big mirror and fell on my knees and just said, dear God, what am I doing wrong? Everything I do ends in, show me what I'm supposed to do. I was just so confused about it. I thought I had done everything right all my life. I'm perfect. I have the perfect house overlooking the ocean in Laguna Beach. I've got a lawyer for a husband. We have got a Cadillac. I mean, we have the perfect little girl. What is wrong with this picture?
Yeah, absolutely.
it was all superficial.
Yeah.
It was all about...
But this is how you've been educated to be this way. And so that part of you was like, yeah, look, we've achieved it, but it's not working.
Not everything. Why aren't I happy?
Yeah.
I did everything you said to do. Why am I so unhappy? Well, because I'm a mother and I loved my Georgia and I had a mother instinct, thank God. And losing that child, losing that little boy was the most devastating thing to lose. It, just the whole thing about it. And then a friend came over me and she said, have you read this book called Codependence No More? Do you remember that book?
No, I don't know.
And I said, no, what's codependence? She said, read this book. And so I read the book and the last thing in it says, immediately get yourself to a 12-step program, to an Al-Anon program.
Yeah.
And after I had prayed and said, what am I doing wrong? Help me. This book came. I immediately did get to an Al-Anon meeting. It was pretty overwhelming, all the people there, the clapping, the whole thing. But I would go, I wouldn't talk or anything. I would just listen. And I began to identify with what the people were saying. They would tell their stories and I go, oh yeah, right. My dad. Yes.
What do you remember, Sherry, what do you remember that you identified with?
I identified, first of all, that I had cut my teeth on drug addicts, alcoholics, and crazy people. Those were my role models. And that I had married an alcoholic drug addict that I thought was super cool. And he was handsome and everything else. But as people talked, I began to really realize that I was an ACA. So then I not only was going to Al-Anon, I moved into adult children of alcoholics.
Yeah.
That was such an awareness to me to find out that I had been raised by my grandmother, who I totally was an alcoholic and a drug addict. My father, complete alcoholic. My mother, you could say, was a drug addict because, not like doing coke or anything, but Valium, sleeping pills, Dexedrine. Things like that. That was just no big deal. Everyone did it back then in their day. Drinking, parties. And then I began to go to ACA meetings where people were really nice to me. I was beginning to see what it was like to feel loved.
Wow.
And they would say, go where the love is, not where it should be. That it should be coming from my loved ones.
Yeah.
I had to go to meetings to understand what it felt like to fill up that void inside of me. And then they began to say, oh, you should write a book. I mean, your story, that really happened. Oh my God, I can't believe that happened to you in your life. I can't believe that you went through that. And I started going, really? I have a voice. You're interested in anything I have to say, mm-hmm. not just how I look. And then I remember just going, I'm going to write a book. I am going to tell the Maybelline story. It took me 30 years, really, you know, to be able from the conception, maybe 20, 25, 30 years. I got the first idea when I was 15, because Nana, my Miss Maybelline, said, in your speech class, tell the Maybelline story. I won the awards, everything. It was great. But it wasn't until I lost the baby, and then my grandmother was murdered, was killed, burned beyond recognition in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Well, that's all for today's episode of Bulimia Sucks. Thanks for listening, and thank you to Sherry for joining me today and sharing your incredible journey. Join us again on the next episode of Bulimia Sucks, where we'll be playing part two of our chat with Sherry. And to find out what happened after her grandmother, Miss Maybelline, was murdered, and how Sherry finally learned to understand who she was inside and stop the craziness of thinking who she had to be loved. And also how Sherry achieved her degree in true wisdom. And plus, if you haven't already heard about it, check out my book, Bulimia Sucks, on Amazon, to learn many different techniques to help you to begin to break through your painful bulimic behaviours. And if you like the book, then please leave a review. And let us know what you think of the show, and show some love for your favourite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify or Google Podcasts. And come and join us on our Facebook group, Bulimia Sucks. It would be great to connect with you there.
Bulimia sucks, but you don't. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon.